Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Thursday night, there's a party at my place. Don't worry about the knickknacks of the night, please. And don't think for a second we're from squares. My party's two bench warmers into players. Wipe your feet on the rug when you come in, but put your coat right here in my oven. Come around, let me show you how we do this. We're gonna party in the place where we cook shit. Cup, ladles, we got that. Come, ladies, shake your back. Side, double wide, side to side. The first prize trophy, some pantomime. Syrup, living room clear up. And we're cooking pancakes, so everybody cheer up.
That was amazing.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On this episode, you'll hear about the Bikini Body Project, Yelp's Jeffrey Steven will visit to talk about Thanksgiving food you can find all over town, and Jenna Kim Jones, stand-up comedian, is featured later on. The Bikini Body Project is a fitness project created by trainer Chase Evans. The program consists of 6 to 8 weeks worth of workouts with 6 days of training per week along with a planned diet. Charity April, who had already been working out on some other programs, took on the project and worked hard to achieve some amazing results. Slug writer Isha B sat down with April to talk about her experience with the project.
So you're getting back into modeling, and I saw some super sexy pictures of you. You have a super sweet bikini body, and I was reading a little bit. So what is the Bikini Body Challenge?
I started the project because when I got back into modeling, I did a test shoot to see how I would do, and I didn't like the way that the photos turned out. And so I determined that age also comes with challenges in the body.
Totally.
And so I wanted to see, I've been working out at Vitality. At the time, it had been about 9 months before I started the Bikini Body Project. And I'd seen all these people coming into the gym that were competing for the Bikini Body competition.
Well, I guess we should digress then. So tell us about Vitality. What's that all about?
So Vitality, it's Vitality Functional Fitness Programming. It's kind of a mixture between personal training and CrossFit. So it's not as crazy and hardcore as CrossFit. It's more tailored and personalized, like a personal trainer, but you do work out with other people. It's more about strengthening, conditioning, so flexibility.
Would you be in a group of people with a similar program? Is that how it works, or?
A pretty similar program, although it's more tailored towards each person's needs. But I would say anywhere between 4 and 8 people I probably work out with each time.
Well, that's nice, keeps the classes small.
Yeah, so more personalized that way, which is nice.
And where is that? Is that a local?
It's local, it's in the Sugar House area.
Is there more than one location?
There's just the one location, the one guy who does it, his name's Chase Evans. So I had been doing that for a while, and I decided that not only did I need to take it to the next level, but I also wanted to see if I could develop this bikini body without having to compete and try doing a photo shoot afterwards and see how I felt about myself. But I also know myself. I can only do so much, and I can do something really, really hardcore for a short amount of time. So when I went to Chase, I asked him to do something, to tailor something to fit my needs, in that I could do something really short term, but really hardcore and really effective.
So what kind of program did he design then? Describe your lifestyle right now.
So, well, for 6 weeks, what I did was I worked out 6 days a week for an hour each day. 3 of the days was in his gym. 3 of the days were in an outside gym, so Planet Fitness, and it was all based on what he had basically prescribed for me.
Sure.
So he told me exactly what workouts to do, how many to do, all the reps, all of that stuff.
Kind of based on like what you were looking for, problem areas, stuff like that?
Problem areas, and then how to develop a body that is worthy of competing.
Totally, gotcha. So,
and then he also incorporated a diet program that was about 5 meals a day, and specific meals with specific amounts every specific times of every day.
So what do you think about that? Do you feel like diet is a big part of your success, or do you feel like the exercises make the biggest difference?
It's certainly a 50-50. Without the diet, I couldn't have done the workout program because there's a ton of protein that's involved, a ton of healthy fats.
Yeah.
Without the healthy fats, I wouldn't have been able to maintain a healthy mindset for it. It definitely helped with the lack of sugar and lack of salt that I wasn't able to eat.
Sure. Pretty intensive. So if there was someone who wanted to do something like this, what kind of advice or suggestions would you have for them?
I would say dedication is huge, motivation is huge, the desire to have that outcome is huge, but also knowing that it's such a short amount of time that you have to dedicate to it, and then remembering that you have to maintain that body that you worked so hard for after that 6-week program is over. Going back and reevaluating that is probably the best advice I could give somebody.
Sure, because at the end of it, if you want to keep that same body, then you'd have to keep on exercising on that level.
Not on harder. That level, but you certainly don't want to go back to where you were at.
Sure.
But now that I've done it, I can go back and say, okay, 2 weeks of this hardcore, I can get back to where I was. And I can go for, you know, a couple of weeks going to birthday parties and having cake and ice cream and eating burgers or whatever if I want, but I know how to reverse it.
So this is kind of, I mean, specifically for modeling, since it's something that, you know, is nice for the short term, or if you needed to do it fast and for the short term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I have 2 photo shoots coming up in the next 2 weeks. And so I'm doing another intensive program that's going to last for 2 weeks up until that photo shoot, so I can prepare myself for it.
Hey, that is awesome. So what do you think made this so different from other efforts that you've made before?
Well, I would say that it worked. I mean, I've tried so many different things, and I used to go to the gym for 3 months, 6 months, probably the longest, and then I'd stop going one day and then I just wouldn't go back.
Yeah.
And then I'd get back into the routine of not going to the gym. And I think a lot of it was because it just didn't ever really give me the results I was looking for, whereas this did. I was not only impressed with the results, but I was surprised by them. I got results that I didn't expect.
That's cool. That is the truth of it. My sister was having a conversation with someone about what workout is the best and kind of talking about how she does yoga and how they didn't like yoga. And she said, well, you know, the best kind of exercise is the exercise that you do. Yeah. So at the end of the day, it's just whatever works for the people that are doing it.
For more information on the Bikini Body Project, visit them online at bikinibodyproject.tumblr.com. Despite Despair is a hardcore band from Provo, Utah, they formed in 2008, taking their name from a Parallax song to pay tribute to that band. Last year, they released their debut EP, Victims to Vultures, and in April 2012, they teamed up with Gunner to release a 6-track split album called Unyoke. This is a song called Driven by Defeat by Despite Despair.
Let's go!
Despite Despair will be playing Localized at the Urban Lounge this Saturday, November 10th, with Dunn and Top Dead Celebrity. The show starts at 10 p.m. and is just $5. To find out more about the band and pick up their albums, visit them online at facebook.com/despitedespair. And we are welcoming back to Soundwaves from the Underground, Jeffrey Stedman of Yelp, and we are talking about all things tasty for Thanksgiving that you can find out and about on the town. And first of all, tell me, what's your, like, go-to Thanksgiving, you know, food? What's your one that you cannot go without no matter what you're doing for Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving tradition is, I mean, all day long we cook tons and tons of food in my house, and then we have leftovers for at least a month. And I never cook, for some reason, I never cook yams any other time of year. But when it comes time for Thanksgiving, it's yams. I have a recipe that calls for dried apricots. And it's kind of like and then some nuts on the top of that, and not marshmallows.
No,
I know,
marshmallows.
I know.
That's my mom's style.
Yeah, I can't do the marshmallow. I mean, I can eat them. They're good, but I just I class it up.
And you make enough to last for weeks on end.
Yeah, for sure.
Use it all other kinds of food. Well, you checked out some places that have Thanksgiving goodies probably all the time, but you can kind of make your own feast on the fly, or are these kind of specialty dishes that they do this time of year?
No, I mean, I feel like Thanksgiving, we can live the spirit of Thanksgiving all year round.
And well, we should.
No, I mean it, like, you know, Thanksgiving is great, you sit down and you feast, but there are some great places to get bits and pieces of Thanksgiving all year round, and so why don't we take the month and just eat Thanksgiving all month long and pick up little pieces of our meal? So that was the thought behind today. I think we have to start out with the turkey.
Yes.
And if you're after the traditional turkey dinner, check out Archibald's, which is 11th West, 7800 South. 4 out of 5 stars after 9 reviews. They make a traditional turkey dinner with turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes, gravy, mixed vegetables. Then you have, all kinds of other, things you can throw into that mix from the menu as well. But that's like their great turkey dinner. I'm kind of a non-traditionalist, so I would check out Village Baker, 1658 West, 90th South, 4 out of 5, 20 reviews. I've had this a couple times, a turkey sandwich with cranberry on sourdough bread.
Ooh, all right.
So you got your cranberry, you got your turkey.
I like that.
Yeah.
I love a turkey sandwich with cranberry on it all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of good turkey sandwiches around. In fact, we'll move on to mashed potatoes, but we should also talk about the turkey sandwich at Red Rock.
Uh-huh.
Right here downtown. I think a lot of people are familiar with Red Rock. It's 3.5 out of 5 after 147 reviews. They have this roasted turkey breast on a Tuscan bun with cranberry orange sauce, provolone cheese, iceberg lettuce, and mayonnaise. But really, Yelper shout out the mashed potatoes. They have horseradish mashed potatoes.
Yeah, now we're talking. All right.
So it's got a little kick to it, a little something fun. Also, Nooch's, which is a pizza place. They have their New Haven pizza, which is Yukon Gold mashed potatoes with roasted garlic, bacon, and asparagus.
Now that, I like the idea of those flavors, but it sounds a little funky. Like, how do they just spread mashed potatoes on this bad boy? What do you think? Like,
yeah, it's Alice Y. Let's turn to Alice Y. She says, "I love this pizza so much, and the best part is that my husband doesn't like asparagus, so it's all for me to eat. Even better, it's good cold too. I always order a large and then enjoy the leftovers for as long as they last." So they just dollop the mashed potato on there. Yeah, you wouldn't think so, but like Pie Hole, we were talking about last month has that bacon and potato pizza,
right.
So why not?
It works, man.
Stuffing, you a stuffing fan or no?
It's absolutely. I'm a stuffing, that's one of the dishes my mom keeps away from me on the table at Thanksgiving, because I go to town on that, ever since I was a tyke.
Here's the question, though, why don't we ever eat that anytime else during the year? Do you ever eat
maybe
it
that's
besides
why.
Thanksgiving?
Maybe that's why I always want it so bad, because it is a treat, and I've had so many different kinds from, different people cooking that we've shared meals with over the years,
but
you don't even see it out there in the world unless you go to a place that always has a roast turkey dinner on the menu or something.
That's
but
it.
It's just not out there. But you can get so many awesome different kinds of stuffing out there.
I don't understand. If you're restaurateurs, if you're listening, put some stuffing
please
on the menu. Sugar House Barbecue, they do it. They have a turkey cornbread stuffing and cranberry sandwich.
That's right. That place is one of my faves. Everything's good there.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think we need to say more except cornbread stuffing. So if you're after stuffing that's not Thanksgiving, or even if you are, that's a great place to go and hit it up. A couple more, we'll talk dinner roll.
Oh, yeah, another dish that has to be kept away from me. I just carbo load, basically, on Thanksgiving. It's my thing, because I'm about to run a marathon the next day like everyone else.
Right. Well, you got backyard football, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, the dinner roll. There is nothing better than great dinner roll. And, of course, in Salt Lake City, you have to at least mention the Lion House has those famous rolls.
Classic.
But Vossen's Bread Paradise, 249 West, 200 South, 4 out of 5 after 22 reviews. Darcy G shouts out the dinner rolls, and she says the cheese rolls were out of this world.
I believe it. I swear by Vossen's myself. I stop by there as a regular customer.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
It is. And finally, we got to top it off talking about pumpkin pie. Now, look, about a year ago, I was on talking about pie, and there are some amazing places to get pie. The Dodo's doing it right now, and Penny Ann's Cafe, and a lot of great places. But maybe for a little twist, Deemhead Cafe, 2470 South Main Street, inside of Crone's Hollow.
Oh.
Just 4 reviews right now, but it's got 5 out of 5. They make a pumpkin chai and a pumpkin pie latte.
Ooh. I like it. That's very fall flavored.
Yeah, right? So maybe if you're not into pumpkin pie like so much as like a dish, you want to get it in you want to have a pumpkin pie latte.
That flavor can stretch through the months, and who doesn't love a tasty pumpkin flavored beverage? Even beer, right?
You Uinta's making their Jacked right now.
Yeah, there you go. So. There you go.
That's kind of a brief look at Thanksgiving dinner deconstructed. Of course, there are some traditional places around. If you're out looking for a turkey, just pop up your Yelp app on your smartphone or get on Yelp.com and search turkey, and you're going to have all kinds of results.
You'll find it. Well, it's a bonus. It's a lot of people have to work or away from home on Thanksgiving. You can go out and at least get the flavors you remember from childhood or whatever and
that's it.
Do it upright. That's excellent. It. Well, I appreciate it, Jeffrey. You'll be back. And a month or so to talk about some, sort of holiday-themed fare, perhaps.
Yeah.
And everybody get out there and check out yelp.com/Salt Lake City and on Twitter @YelpUtah, and they can find all the latest from you guys.
Absolutely, yep.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is your Sound Waves from the Underground weekly daily calendar for November 6th through November 12th. November 6th, minus the bear, Math Rockers, one of those phrases that I hate more than life itself. They are playing at the Depot with Cursive, one of my favorite bands from my hometown of Omaha, Nebraska, and Girl in a Coma. Minus the Bear's been around a good 10 years. Got some really good stuff out there, actually, on the new album. Their release, Infinity Overhead, came out just in September. They are headlining the Depot on Tuesday, November 6th. Skip a day on Wednesday and get to Thursday, and you get to one of the finest bluegrass bands around. The infamous String Dusters, for those of you who don't listen to a lot of bluegrass, have some guys with serious chops in the band. They play rapid-fire bluegrass, very traditional in style. They are no jam band. They are very traditional. And they were just nominated for a Grammy for Best Country Instrumental, and in case you are afraid of country music, this is a fine band that might get you into it a little bit. Infamous String Dusters are playing at the State Room on Thursday, November 8th. On Friday, November 9th, The Faint, yes, another Omaha band. We're going to hear a lot of Omaha bands as long as I'm around. They are headlining at In the Venue, and they are performing their classic album Dance Macabre in its entirety. The band kind of split up a few years ago, but they got back together, and they are now putting out records on their own label, including a new deluxe edition of Dance Macabre. They'll be headlining at In the Venue on Friday, November 9th. Also on November 9th, Carrie Fisher, yes, Princess Leia, and noted Hollywood junkie, will be giving a little spiel at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. She's also a recipient of the Peak Award, which honors the legacy of Salt Lake City native Kim Peak, who is the inspiration for the Rain Man film. She'll be giving a little talk and always entertaining if anybody has ever seen her. Also on November 9th at the Complex, DRI, one of the great old-school hardcore punk bands, very similar to, Suicidal Tendencies, Corrosion of Conformity. You're going to see a lot of 40-somethings in the pit at this show. They've actually been back together since about the mid-90s, putting out new records here and there. It's been a while since their last one, but they've been a band since 1982, and they were always one of my favorites back in the day. Should be fun to see what they're doing these days. And also November 9th on Friday, Andrew Jackson Jihad playing at Kilby Court, and typically these guys are only a two-piece with an acoustic guitar and an upright bass. They're bringing a full band on the road for this one, doing a little punk with some folky influences in there. They'll be playing with Future of the Left from Cardiff, Wales, and Bomb the Music Industry's Jeff Rosenstock. Saturday, November 10th, Another up-and-coming band called Milo Green is headlining at Kilby Court. I saw them about a month ago play with the Civil Wars. Very much that same sort of folky boy-girl vocals. Very much that SoCal 70s sound from Laurel Canyon. People who are into really great songcraft and those boys and girls trading vocals. Well worth seeing at Kilby Court on Saturday, November 10th. Sunday, November 11th, Kanon is playing at the State Room. He's a Somalian-Canadian mix, a poet, a rapper, a singer, a songwriter, a multi-instrumentalist. Saw him at Sundance a couple years ago doing one of the Music Cafe shows. Quite an entertaining character, strong songwriter. His most recent release includes collaborations with Nas and Nelly Furtado on it, so he's definitely got some pop in him, but a little bit of a hip-hop sound. And finally, on Monday, November 12th, at the Complex, Delta Spirit returns. Last time through, they played at the Urban Lounge. They're back, playing a slightly bigger room. Their self-titled album caused a bit of a stir. They formerly lived in California, now live in Brooklyn, touring behind their self-titled album. This is probably the last time we'll see them for another year or two, so well worth checking out if you have the time. Delta Spirit at the Complex on Monday, November 12th. As always, you can get your events in the daily calendar at slugmag.com. It's free if you just want to get your event listed with a date where it's happening. We also have a new deal where if you sign up for $50 for a year or $5 for a month, you can add a bunch of stuff to your listing. You can add a photo, links to the web, assorted other information to your listings. Again, only $50 for a year or $5 for a month. And make sure every day to go check out slugmag.com and see what's happening all over town. The hard-rocking band Top Dead Celebrity is one of our very best hard rock groups in Salt Lake City. The group currently consists of Jeff Anderson, Jeff Johnson, Jesse Mills, and Andy Patterson. The band released their self-titled debut in April 2009, oh so long ago, and their second full-length, Midwestern Rube, came out in March 2011. This is a song off of Midwestern Rube called Welcome Aboard. Top Dead Celebrity will be playing localized at the Urban Lounge this Saturday, November 10th, with Done and Despite Despair. Show starts at 10 and is just $5. To read more on the band and localized, check out the November 2012 issue of Slug, out on the street right now. And to buy their albums and get more info, visit them online at topdeadcelebrity.com. In case you always thought that nothing funny could ever come out of Provo, Jenna Kim Jones is here to prove you wrong. She started off her career when she was a student at NYU, and she got into producing, landing gigs at The Late Show with David Letterman and eventually with The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Earlier this year, Jones quit her gig at The Daily Show to pursue her career in stand-up comedy, and she is also one of the funniest people on Twitter, so definitely check her out there. Slug's managing editor, Esther Moronio, chatted with Jones about her career.
So can you tell me how you first got involved in comedy?
I kind of grew up loving comedy. I would watch David Letterman every single night. I loved comedy. And when I went to college, I decided to go to NYU. Mm-hmm. And NYU was a great experience. I went there not knowing what I wanted to do and just kind of realized, like, I love TV. Why am I not pursuing television? So I ended up majoring in producing and writing for TV. And that led me to do a lot of internships. And I ended up doing an internship at The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And after I graduated, they contacted me and were looking for an assistant. So I applied and interviewed and ended up getting that job, which was really exciting. And I started, you know, writing a little bit. And my interest in comedy grew. And I started hanging out with my coworkers, who the majority of were stand-up comedians. So I'd go to shows, and I would just, like, sit there and watch and kind of have this, like, I was a little bit envious of them because it looked like they were having so much fun. I craved being on stage, too. And I would listen to their jokes and be like, well, I could write that. I can think of these ideas, too. So I just decided one day I was going to start, and my coworkers were really supportive. I told them I wanted to do it, and they were like, you know, once you start, you're going to get the bug, and you're not going to want to stop. And it was true. I started doing a lot of open mics and little shows here and there, and I just loved it. And at first, I was so bad. I was so terrible. And it was just like, I didn't know what I was doing, and writing jokes on paper was completely different than performing. And so it was something I had to practice a lot, and it just kind of one day just clicked, and I just knew it was what I wanted to do. So since then, it's just been a fun journey of doing stand-up comedy, and I still love TV, and I don't work at The Daily Show anymore, but I still have that interest, and so I wouldn't be surprised if I decided to get back into television one of these days. So it's pretty great. I love comedy.
Tell me, because I'm sure that people will be really interested that you worked for The Daily Show. Tell me a little bit about what you did there and what the experience was like.
It was awesome. I was a production assistant for a couple years, and then I was a script assistant for a couple of years. And I loved my experience there. It was super positive. Everyone there is hilarious, which is, like, very intimidating at first, but then you kind of get the swing of it, and you just kind of jump right in and laugh with everybody and hang out. And it's a great environment. It's better than... I worked in a couple of TV shows as an intern, and Daily Show is by far the best environment that I was in. And Jon is so nice, and he is involved in your life, and he always asked me how my stand-up was going and was very aware of everybody and their situations. And so I loved working there, and actually it was awesome because I kind of had an advantage because I was constantly around people who are awesome writers. And so as a stand-up, I feel like I had an advantage where I learned quicker because I was constantly around people who are so smart and funny. It kind of forced me to up my game right away. I couldn't fuck off because I have my pride was on the line. People who at work saw me perform. Uh-huh. But also it just forced me to try harder, which was awesome. But The Daily Show is awesome. I got to go to the Emmys twice, which was so fun, especially fun because they win every year. So
yeah.
But I loved The Daily Show, and I still, some of my best friends are from there, so are back there in New York. I just moved to L.A., so I'm trying out L.A. these days.
tell me, because you said that the transition from writing jokes on paper to performing them is kind of tough. Tell me how you made that transition and what was hard about it.
The thing that's tricky about stand-up, and in writing as well, but not as much, you can kind of get away in writing, write things different ways. In stand-up, the wording and the way you present the joke is very particular. And then when you write a joke on paper, it just kind of has to flow and be funny. But in stand-up, half the battle is your delivery. You know, certain pauses or certain ways that you pronounce words, you can't do that on paper. But in stand-up, it's this whole new world of you have to be aware of what you're doing, how your presence is. And in stand-up, I found that sometimes I'll have a joke that I'll hit and it'll just be so funny, and then the next time I do it, it's not as funny. And I look back and I think, well, why wasn't it as funny the second or third time as it was the first or second time? And it turns out it's like, if I switch one word in my stand-up, you know, if I say a sentence and I just switch two words out of place or something, mm-hmm. it can totally change the way the joke sounds and make it more or less funny. And so I'm pretty particular. That's kind of why I haven't really ever done improv before, because improv to me is like really intimidating.
Yeah.
And really out of control. But stand-up, it's like it's all in your control. And I'm pretty particular where I like to write down word for word my jokes. Some stand-ups are a lot better than me in that way. They don't have to. But I'm kind of, I like to know exactly what I'm going to say, because I know if I say it the right way, it's funny. And
yeah.
If I don't, it's less funny. It's so much more meticulous than I thought it would be. And different than writing, whereas writing, you know, people can kind of take liberties of how they read it or the way they read it. And so it's different.
So where do you get most of your material? Like, where are you pulling from usually?
My crazy life. I just got married, so like I'm writing all this new material about my husband, and I just told him, I was like, listen, deal with it. I'm going to make fun of you. That's just the way it goes. I make fun of my family a lot. I've got a bunch of siblings and a bunch of nieces and nephews, and my mom, she's kind of a character. And so I kind of write about her a little bit and the family dynamic. My favorite thing in the world is food, so I end up writing a lot about food and my battle with food and my love affair with food. So it's really about me and my life, and I feel that a lot of my life experiences, I think most people have similar life experiences. The best way to do stand-up is to find something in your life, a particular experience that's also a universal experience, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just pulled from my life, and it's really kind of crazy. It's fun.
So I know that there's a stereotype behind women not being funny, so I know that that might be a hurdle that you have to cross. So what is it like being a female stand-up comedian, and what kinds of pros and cons are there that might be different for men?
Typically, people just think guys are funnier than girls. I think guys are more willing to be risky on stage than girls. Girls care more what people think. So, I'm less likely to talk about gross stuff or, like, farts or poop on stage, because I don't really want to talk about that. I've got some dignity. I can't deal with that. But I think there is this weird, I've experienced it a lot of times. I remember one time I went and did a mic in New York, and the guy didn't even say my name. All he said was, all right, up next we have the tits of the show, whatever. And I was like, oh, awesome. Thank you for that respectful intro. You know, so there's times when there's just guys who just are jerks, and that's just the way it is. I have found that sometimes it's harder to get an audience engaged. I've done auditions, comedy auditions, where the audience is engaged with all the guys, and then I get up there, and it's like I have this uphill battle right from the start where, oh, girl, oof, I don't know. And it's kind of hard. And it's sad, too, because it's not only guys that kind of perpetuate that stereotype. I hear girls, too, say, like, oh, guys are just funny or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just think, come on, you got to give us a chance. This is the first time this has ever happened to me. I entered a comedy competition that was last night, and I won first place.
Oh,
and
cool.
The second and third place were girls, too. And so the top three were girls, which I've never seen that happen. But it was really awesome because it was so much fun to have this, like, yes, girl power. But I think for me, it's about to overcome that is I just have to be funnier. I just have to try harder. And I know that kind of sucks for girls. Like, well, that's stupid that you have to work harder than a guy. But at the same time, it's like, well, I'd rather show the guys up. So I'm going to just have to work harder. and just write funnier jokes, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not the answer girls want to hear, but... And there are really successful female stand-ups, but I don't know. I don't know. This is a good question. It's something that I think about, and I don't have good answers for yet, except that I just have to work hard and be funny. Since you've done stand-up in L.A. and New York City, are those audiences different than the Utah audience?
Gosh. Well, I found that the New York audience is much edgier and a little darker than the L.A. audience. Utah audience is tricky. Sometimes they're hard to figure out because sometimes they're just kind of tough. Like, they say they're having a good time, but they don't laugh out loud, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like... And sometimes the New York and L.A. audiences are a little bit more boisterous and a little more pumped. But then Utah has surprised me, and I've had some of my very, very best shows in Salt Lake City. So it's kind of hit and miss. Sometimes I get people who smile and look like they're having a good time but aren't the crazy fun audiences. But then at other times I've had my best shows. So it depends. It really depends.
You were recently featured in an I'm a Mormon ad, and you kind of market yourself as a clean comic. Is that a benefit to you outside of Utah?
You know, it is, surprisingly. I've noticed that LA clubs typically prefer clean comedy. I know that if I want to get on TV as a stand-up, my comedy has to definitely be on the cleaner side. And if you want, I mean, honestly, the cleaner you are, the more profitable you can be, the wider your range, which is great if you want to make money in this business.
Mm-hmm.
Super dirty comics typically aren't going to get hired to do corporate gigs, to do commercial stuff, because they're going to want somebody who's clean and fresh. So typically it's been a benefit. I've bombed in shows where people don't like me because I'm not dirty, and that's fine. I'm happy to be a clean comic because ultimately I think it's going to help me. I've never found anybody, besides those few audiences who just didn't love me that much, I've never had anybody say, like, ooh, you're just too clean, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's been a good thing. I like it. I mean, I think with my personality, and if I were dirty, I think it would be off-putting. I think people would be like, this makes no sense.
Yeah.
Plus, I'd probably get it wrong and just say stuff wrong anyway, because I'm just kind of oblivious. So I'd hear it off and be like, they were doing alcohol, you know, or something really embarrassing. So.
Yeah. Have you ever been heckled?
Yes, I have. Typically, I get heckled, like, if someone's really drunk, then they'll heckle. Mm-hmm. But it's usually, like, and I know this is going to be really weird, it's usually, like, old ladies just like, yelling at me about, like, oh, you're such a cute little girl, or, oh, it's so awkward. It's like, but I've had guys before, like, try to hit on me on stage, which is super weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I can usually, if I was in New York or L.A., I would shut them down quickly with just like, well, now I'm married, so that's easy. But before, it was kind of like, well, I'm a Mormon, so I don't know if you know what that means, but I have this book we could talk about afterwards. So, like, usually, I just scare them away.
Yeah.
Yeah, never anything too negative. But being heckled, even someone shouting out stuff, it totally can throw off your game. And so, typically, I just try to shut them up really fast.
I also watched some of your movie reviews for ClearPlay. Is that something that you're doing in L.A.?
Yes, I just do it from my house. I started doing that. They asked for funny movie reviews, and so that's what I do. It's a pretty fun gig. I like watching movies and getting paid to watch movies.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm happy to do that. But yeah, I just do those from my house. They're pretty ghetto, but fun. Really fun.
Jones will be returning to Utah, performing two nights at Wise Guys at Trolley Square on November 16th and November 17th. Tickets are just $12, and there's two shows on both nights. For more information about Jones, visit her online at JennaKimJones.com. Thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, as always, visit SlugMag.com. The holidays are quickly approaching, and we'll be talking about specialty brews for the winter months. What seasonal beers are you looking forward to the most? You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we just might play what you have to say on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. Associate producers are Esther Moreno, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer, Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Main logo and art design by T. Doan. Technical design by Kate Colgan. Join us next week when we'll be talking about the business side of music. We'll be talking about CD Baby, we'll talk to a member of the Utah Lawyers for the Arts, and we'll talk to some members of bands that have been out on the road touring and dropping some lessons on us all. So thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.